Monster Man, Episode 81, Blindheim to Bloodworm, Giant. Hello, and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the 1981 Fiend Folio Supplement for Advanced Dungeons & Dragons 1st Edition. And as I do, I'm talking about the monsters that I find in it, their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games. In today's episode, we've got a big old glowy frog, a mean bird, and a slimy worm. So let's get started. First up, we have the Blindheim, or the Blindheim, created by Roger Musson. Now, this is a frog with big head... Well, that's not fair. It is a frog-like humanoid with eyes that glow kind of like headlights. It can see without the headlights lit up. It has a sort of third eyelid that turns off the lamp function, I guess. And when they're on, it can use them to blind you. I think that the Blindheim, or probably, I guess, the Blindheim, is a pun or something. Because Blindheim is also a village in Bavaria. And I'm sure that you could put lots of place names into, you know, you could put lots of monster names into Google and find that they're also place names, because a lot of places with strange names in the world. But I do think that it's particularly relevant because Blindheim is not just anywhere. Although it's a very small town, it has great historical significance. Its name is more commonly pronounced in English as Blenheim, and of course it is the site, or at least the vicinity, of the Battle of Blenheim, one of the decisive battles of the War of the Spanish Succession fought in 1704, and particularly significant for students of British history. So, I wonder if Roger Musson isn't, like a lot of gamers, a little bit of a military history buff and knew this piece of trivia that the real name of Blenheim is Blindheim, and thought, oh, you know, that sounds kind of like a monster's name, and made up a monster to go along with it. Fun name origin aside, I think that the Blindheim is actually a pretty good monster. It's, well, I mean, for one thing, we're talking about the Fiend Folio, so it's got some lovely Russ Nicholson art. Boy, that guy is really elevating a lot of this material. I mean, I almost feel like I shouldn't even point it out, because it's kind of the standard thing that has good Russ Nicholson art. But anyway, it's got some good Russ Nicholson art. And it's also, I think, a mechanic that works really interestingly to complicate a fight, and particularly if you're not just fighting a Blindheim, right? So if you're in some kind of darkened cave, and then here's this thing that runs around shining a light and blinding you, and you have to start thinking about, you know, where you're looking during this fight, you know, where the lines of sight are and where it's looking and spreading out so that it can't blind everybody at once and all that kind of thing. I think it produces really interesting, not just tactical complications, but also complications that encourage you to envision the dark and chaotic space that you're fighting in. And that, I think, is something that's always really interesting in a game. Now, I don't think it works more than two or three times, because after a while, you just start to go, yeah, I don't look at its eyes, that's a -3 or whatever. It's also nice to see a mechanic that, for once, is a little bit harder on all the people who've got extra good vision in low-light conditions, right? In some games of D&D, it can start to feel like being a human, being, you know, the one poor chump who has to carry around a light source, is a little bit annoying. So now you get your revenge. Anyway, the Blindheim is pretty good. It's got a good illustration, and I do like the fact that it makes people think, you know, it's a monster that makes people think not just about the monster, but about the environment that it's found in. Actually, we're going to see that with a couple of the other ones here. Our next two monsters have some things in common. They're both created by Games Workshop co-founder and Fighting Fantasy co-creator Ian Livingston, and they're both ecological monsters like Livingston's last creature, the assassin bug. So it seems to me that, you know, maybe if Roger Musson's a military history buff, Ian Livingston might be something of a nature lover, because he's clearly kind of getting a lot of his inspiration from, from real-world animal behavior. Take the Bloodhawk. There's nothing supernatural about the Bloodhawk, particularly. It's merely a particularly aggressive bird of prey. Now, the thing is that, in reality, most bird species, fast and, you know, sharp-clawed and sharp-beaked and dangerous though they might be, won't really fight a human. You know, they just fly away, right? They can fly, so why wouldn't they just fly away? Unless you're trying to, like, get at their nest or something. Or, you know, you startle or provoke them in some way. But in general, most animals, even dangerous predators, don't attack a human unprovoked. Well, that's boring. So instead, what we're going to do is come up with a particularly aggressive and vicious version of, you know, a hawk or a falcon. And if you've ever looked at the claws and beak on one of these bad boys and thought, oh, they could really do me a mischief, well, the Bloodhawk is that kind of like turned up to comic book level. But it also has this wonderful detail, which is that Bloodhawks will take gems off a dead person's body because male Bloodhawks take them back to their nests and use them to decorate them in order to attract female Bloodhawks. And that is, I believe, taken from real-world bird behavior. Specifically, it sounds like the mating behavior of the bowerbird, a group of bird species that are found in Australia and New Guinea, and male bowerbirds collect shiny objects and sticks and things, and they build these elaborate nests, or bowers, in order to attract females. And so this gives you a couple of, like, little extra facts for your ranger to know or whatever, right? And they also mean that you might find yourself going and trying to get to a Bloodhawk nest, because we know that Bloodhawks, you know, like to fill their nest with valuable objects. Only gems. Not gold, just gems. It's just a fun little detail that combines, you know, kind of the elements of a fantasy role-playing game with real-world interesting animal behavior. So if you're kind of, you know, a nature show person, which is to say the kind of person who plays a ranger, I guess. I mean, I'm playing a ranger, so I'm a fine one to talk. But, you know, it gives you just this little bit of extra, like, knowledge or trivia to have a character dispense that just helps build up the world in a small way. The next monster is another kind of, you know, it's not really a monster, it's just an animal from Ian Livingstone, and that is the Bloodworm Comet Giant. So the Bloodworm Comet Giant is basically our old pal, the Leech Comet Giant. It's about 20 feet long, and if you provoke it or it's hungry, it'll latch onto you with its mouth and start sucking your blood out. Now, the interesting thing about the Bloodworm Comet Giant is that it's a big, I mean, it's 20 foot long, it lives in watery environments, and it kind of sits in the water like a crocodile, with its gray and green back protruding from the surface and looking for all the world like a mossy rock. And presumably this is how it kind of lulls its prey into a false sense of security, because it's just, you know, hanging out in this river or stream looking like a rock. You can imagine, particularly in sort of low-light environments, that this could be a very effective camouflage. It's wet and shiny, and it just looks like a stone. So this is a monster that does a really great job in complicating existing action sequences, right? So we just say, you know, whatever, room number 15, this cavern is bisected by a swiftly flowing river. You know, there's a pattern of stepping stones that lead from one side to the other, but some of these are, in fact, giant bloodworms, and you know, here you've stolen the sacred gem, and you're running like heck out of the cavern while all the hobgoblins are pursuing you, you know, waving their partisans and military forks and shouting imprecations, and you start trying to, you know, dash across these stepping stones to get to the other side, only to find out that some of them are in fact bloodworms, Comet Giant. Can you maybe, you know, fool some of them into attacking the hobgoblins? And there's just something that, if it's just a big stand-up fight of you and a bunch of your friends hacking at a big worm with your longswords, it's not more or less interesting than hacking at anything else with your longswords. But these ecologically described monsters are easy to integrate into game environments in a way that feels natural. And that's what's fun about them. You know, they're neither this nor the Bloodhawk thing with the gems might really be plausible animal behavior. But just the fact that it is described in a type of naturalistic description that is familiar to us gives us the coating of realism that we need in order to integrate this monster into the game effectively. So both the Bloodhawk and the Bloodworm Comet Giant share that trait that you can kind of make them a little bit more interesting just by saying some stuff that sounds like David Attenborough might say it. All right, that's about all the time we have for today. Join me next episode when we talk about a mischievous sprite and another weirdo dinosaur on Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. Thank you for listening.
Do you have a favorite monster? Do you have something you'd like me to talk about? Find me on Twitter at GonzoHistory or send me an email, gonzohistory@gmail.com. If you want to support the podcast, you can do so at patreon.com/monsterman. Monster Man, where you'll find lots of extra bonus content and my brand new show, Patron Deities, in which I explore the deities and demigods advanced Dungeons & Dragons book. Check it out. Thanks for listening.